Hey guys, rub your head and pat your stomach at the same time. This week on 8-Bit Archaeology, we're talking about different control schemes. Hey guys, welcome back to 8-Bit Archaeology. My name's Eric and I love playing video games. So it's been a little bit of a hiatus since my last episode, and there is a very decent reason for that. About 3 weeks ago, I was taking a bike ride and I fell off and busted my wrist. Since then, I have had surgery and I am currently recovering with not being able to use my right hand. So I've been a little down and about and not been able to make an episode as of recent, and that kind of bummed me out, so I decided to make one based on some things that have been coming to my mind as I've been trying to play games one-handed and trying different controller scenarios. So basically what I want to kind of talk about this episode is different control schemes in video games, from the traditional to wacky to touchscreens to everything in between that I've been encountering lately that creates difficulties and works on a regular level. This episode is unscripted, and I'm gonna just kind of be giving my free thoughts, but I just wanted to kind of talk about this as a topic instead of specific games, because I found that there are certain things that are very accessible about different types of control methods, but in other methods can be very obtuse. Okay, so what do you really consider when you think about traditional control schemes? Well, when I think about this, the thing that I think of first is the classic NES controller, and this is sort of what's shaped the basis for our controllers nowadays. It was very simple. It had a directional pad, an A, and a B button. And from there, things gradually got added on. At first, it was just D-pad, a couple more buttons on the SNES controller, like the X and the Y button, as well as shoulder buttons. And that became pretty standard for a while, but then things started to get crazy, and we started adding in things D-stick controls and multiple shoulder buttons and multiple directional pads and all sorts of different wacky button schemes. And all these kind of amalgamate to what the standard controller input methods are for today, which is generally two sticks, one D-pad, four face buttons, and then generally two shoulder buttons on each side. So you end up with, the Xbox controller, PS4 controller, and Switch Pro controller all do it a little bit differently, but they all have the same basic input methods with some variation in their sort of start and select buttons. And that's sort of what has come to evolve from controller design over the years. And honestly, I can't imagine playing games really otherwise deviating from the control methods we have today and how they came from that point. I mean, back when I was younger, I used to just play a straight-up Game Boy Advance or a DS all the time, so I'm really used to D-pad control schemes, face buttons, shoulder buttons, all that good stuff, and things that have all turned into the modern controller today. So what I've always found is that this sort of control scheme is very intuitive. When you know how to work the face buttons, the analog sticks, the D-pad, the shoulder buttons all work together in tandem in different games in a variety of ways to engage with the character or avatar or whatever it is you're controlling in the game. Now, this sort of modern evolution of control methods has been over the course of, a couple decades. And it's sort of amalgamated into what we have today. Now, with my wrist being busted, I went back and tried to play with a regular controller, and it's kind of impossible for me right now. So this is what sort of spurred me to look for other control methods. And what I landed on was trying to find ways that I could play games with just one hand instead of using both my hands, because with my broken wrist, I can't really hold a regular controller currently. So while I do love standard control methods, this sort of made me think outside of the box, and what can you really do to expand the horizons of the modern control method. So one control scheme that I kind of wanted to touch on that's part of a modern console that I interact with a lot is the Joy-Cons on the Nintendo Switch. So the Joy-Cons were sort of innovative in the fact that they broke up a standard control scheme into two different controllers that attached to the side of the console for portable play, which I think is really awesome. I love playing the Switch in handheld mode. The controls work. well enough when you need them to. The D-pad on the left Joy-Con is not always the best, but I find myself relying more on the analog stick when I'm using it in handheld mode than the D-pad, just because of placement and the fact that it's just a bunch of buttons. But for what it's worth, the Joy-Cons are a really good control option. Now, certain games on Nintendo Switch allow you to play with one controller, and there's a few games in specific recently that I've been testing out playing with one Joy-Con because I only have one hand. One of those is The World Ends With You Final Remix. I purchased that a while ago, and I'm a diehard Toyway fan. And for those of you that don't know this game, it was originally a Nintendo DS game about a decade ago that used a combination of the touchscreen and the top screen in battles and relied heavily on touchscreen combat controls. Well, in this game, they have succinctly brought all the controls into either using the touchscreen in handheld mode or using one Joy-Con as a pointer in docked mode. And what I found is this is actually not that usable. I've been able to get by in the game using one Joy-Con because I've played through the game several times and I know how the control schemes work, but using one Joy-Con for a game of that magnitude can almost be a little bit obtuse because you're relying on motion sensors, which, you know, from console pass, whether it's the Kinect or the Wii or whatever, console or motion controls still are not perfect. There are games that implement motion controls in a really decent way, like Splatoon and Breath of the Wild, where you use them in conjunction with analog controls to make things more precise. The World Ends With You relies solely on you aiming a pointer and pressing buttons and using your cursor in different ways, and I found this to be not that conducive. It got on my nerves several times, especially when I tried to play with my non-dominant hand. And not that this is something that everyone's going to run into, but recently Mark Brown from Game Maker's Toolkit has been doing a series on accessibility, and this also got me thinking about this too, was the fact that using one controller should be a decent way to play any game. It shouldn't restrict anyone. Like, using a single Joy-Con should be comfortable. And the matter of the fact is that it always sometimes isn't. Another game that I picked up last week was Save Me, Mr. Taco, which is a game in the style of a retro GBA game. And you can use one Joy-Con sideways, and it emulates a GBA control scheme because all you need is the D-pad or analog stick and two face buttons. And I found that worked really well. So what I wanted to get at with this was the fact that a single Joy-Con is something interesting to look at because using it as a pointer and in one hand, I found, doesn't work that well, but using it as a substitute for a retro console, oh, that was the other thing, is I was using a single Joy-Con with the NES classic games that we got from the Nintendo Switch Online service, and I found that that works relatively well as well. But it's interesting to look at how these sort of mini moderate controllers can be used in a variety of ways, whether it's for motion controls or simple button input, and how they can be used in effective or ineffective ways. While we're on the topic of motion controls too, I think it's kind of inevitable to talk about sort of the elephant in the room when it comes to control schemes for modern consoles, and for me, that's the Nintendo Wii. So I owned a Wii, I played a ton of games on the Wii, and track record with motion controls on the Wii are hit or miss. That was sort of the dawn of the first use of motion controls, and there were games that used it really well, and then there were games that didn't use it really well at all. Now, the Wii's Wii Remote control scheme was a little, not like a normal controller. It looked like a TV remote, and you held it in a similar fashion. It was very simple, and it was very well and cleanly designed for a single controller. And then you had a nunchuck attachment that would be sort of your analog stick and a couple shoulder buttons. Now, games that notoriously do not use the motion controls well for this, and I hate to say it because I love these games, are the Zelda games on the Wii. Twilight Princess and Skyward Sword are sort of notorious for obtuse motion controls when it comes to combat and forcing players to swing a Wiimote to engage with a sword or something like that, and those sorts of things have not aged well. I do think Nintendo hit a really good chord with starting the trend of motion controls and looking at how refined it's gotten today, but the Wii is sort of a bold innovation in terms of console and control schemes that I think pays off in several ways and also doesn't. I think you know, looking at it with rose-tinted glasses, motion controls at the time were amazing. Like, Wii Sports was one of my favorite games on that entire console, and I think that's a lot of people. You know, it was a pack-in, and it just showed off what you could actually do with motion controls, and it was so much fun, and had a ton of replayability because you just played with friends. But then there were certain ways where motion controls can get shoehorned into games where it doesn't, or it doesn't work as well. Like, another game that I played on the Wii, which this was my own fault, I should have picked this up on another console, but Sonic Unleashed, and you had to use motion controls for combat in that game, and oh boy, was that the worst combat experience I've ever had. The platforming was decent, the daytime Sonic levels were really good, but when it came to the brawling sections where you had to swing the Wiimote blindly, it's just not fun. There's no thought put into it, it's not intuitive, and it just sort of gets old after a while. No one wants to sit there and just swing around a Wiimote for a half hour while they're trying to get to the end of a level. So those are sort of the kind of modern control schemes I wanted to talk about, and sort of how they, I wanted to talk about basic modern control schemes and then sort of the deviations from that when it comes to things like Nintendo's weird things with the Joy-Cons and the Wiimote. But now I want to talk about some sort of alternate control methods that I've been trying to mess with the last week or two without being able to use my dominant hand, and talk about how those work and don't work. So, what other control methods have I been trying to use over the past week or two? Well, to put it in simple terms, I've been playing a lot of touchscreen games. Since I can only use one hand, it is not very easy for me to handle console or typical controllers. I was actually able to use my 3DS a decent amount, but it still was hurting my one hand, and it wouldn't have been playable with one hand anyway. So what I wanted to actually talk about mainly was sort of touch control games, and I've been playing a few games on my iPad that I've been meaning to dig into that are available on platforms like Switch and PS4 and Xbox One, but they are also as well suited on the iPad. So the first game that I sort of played through, and this is sort of a whole series, was the Monument Valley series. If you don't know what these games are, they are a sort of Escheric painting puzzle-esque game where you have to solve sort of 3D puzzles that involve you messing with objects in 3D to make connections and paths for a character to move through. It sounds very simple, but it has a very distinct visual style that looks like a classic Escheric painting, and it's hard for me to describe it, but it's basically like the Endless Staircase painting for a point of reference for any of you who don't know what an Escheric painting is. It really warps with the 3D views and makes everything sort of blend together. So you have multiple sections of puzzles that all include different forms of moving blocks, rotating things, and various levels to get through a level. So this is all played with touch control. Basically, you have certain mechanisms you can control with your hand, whether it's dragging certain blocks, rotating things, or to move your character, you simply press a spot. And for a game like this, this works perfectly. Monument Valley, I'm pretty sure, is an iOS exclusive game, and I think everyone has at least seen preface of it from it launching with one of the iPhones or iPads or whatever. And I played through Monument Valley a number of years ago, and I played through Monument Valley 2 last week, which stepped it up a little bit because on multiple levels you had more than one character to control. But this sort of game is very intuitive, and I think plays better on a touchscreen because these puzzles are very tactile and you need to be able to touch them. And the fact that you can do it with one hand made it even more enjoyable. The game's very atmospheric, the music is great, the visual design is awesome and very iconic, and the puzzles themselves are complex, but they're presented in a simple way because you are slowly taught a gradual set of tools that you can do with touch controls that build up over time. So you end up working your way through these complex rooms or boxes of puzzles to the end of a level using touch controls, and I found that to be really well done. So I definitely recommend Monument Valley or Monument Valley 2 for anyone who likes low-key puzzle games and doesn't mind using a touchscreen. One other game that I've been playing that is very suited to touch controls and I would find probably not very suitable for consoles is Donut County. This has been a game that's been followed at several different gaming conventions over the last few years. It's an indie developed game, and the basic premise is that you drag around a hole and you swallow things into the hole. The gameplay is very basic. You drag around a hole, and the more things you swallow, the hole gets bigger. And this game, it has no difficulty really to it. You are basically just swallowing objects, but it is fun, and it is funny, and it is real well written. And I think it speaks to how games don't have to have super complex controls to be enjoyable, right? So the basic premise is that you spend your entire time swallowing a town with a... It's called the Donut Shop app, I think. And the hole gradually gets bigger, and it's just fun. The writing in the game is really top-notch. It's really funny. Basically, you start out the game with everyone at the bottom of this hole, and everyone is telling stories about how they got down there, and then you play through dragging everyone down through the holes. It's pretty intuitive. It's done pretty well. Soundtrack's good. The mechanics themselves are not that pronounced. You're basically just making a ruckus. So this game is nothing really intense. It's actually just pretty laid back and funny. If you like games that are very not very challenging, but give a rewarding level of experience when you swallow everything into a giant hole, I would recommend this one too. So along with these games, I've been playing a few other games as well. One called Gorogoa, which is a sort of artistic puzzle game. Old Man's Journey, which is a touchscreen based. It relies heavily on a very cute art style, and you're basically taking an old man through a journey. It's very simple. You basically solve different puzzle screens. So basically what I've been doing is I've been playing a lot of touchscreen puzzle games because those are what are most manageable at the current moment. So what I'm getting to with this is touch screens as a control method. And what I'm finding with games like this is that you can find rewarding gameplay without it being overly complex. Control schemes don't have to be complex to be rewarding to a player. You can take something with a simple concept, augment it using touch controls, and do it in a way that is smart, but also simple. And what that's really taught me over the last week or two is the fact that games that are simple in design and more accessible just by the use of touch controls and don't require you to hold a controller can be enjoyable and as fulfilling as well. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love my AAA games that use every button on my controller in complex ways and learning combos and stuff like that, but something can be said for a game like Monument Valley where you just use the touch screen to tap things or slide them or rotate them in thoughtful ways that create a complex system of systems that are not hard to interact with. So what I found is I find rewarding gameplay from simple controls, but complex systems that are accessible through through simple controls. So it's sort of this chicken versus egg thing where do complex controls come first or should simple come first? And I think they should really complement each other. If you want to have a complex control scheme and have multiple combos on a traditional controller, go for it. If you want to make it super simple and just make it so your game can be operated off a D-pad and two buttons, great. I just think that all these things should sort of be considered when developers are thinking about how to make games that can be used by anyone, you know, whether someone is injured, has a disability or whatever. And, you know, I'm not doing this justice on the disability part. I'm not trying to. I'm mainly speaking from my experience of not being able to use one of my hands to play games. And it can be really frustrating when you have a game you want to play that uses a controller, but you can't do it because you can't even hold a controller. So I'm just trying to get to the point that, and I'm not expecting all games to be designed or developed this way, but there are ways of creating games that are very simple and accessible to players who may not have the ability to use traditional control schemes that can also be rewarding. So I think that's kind of what I'm getting at, is the fact that traditional control schemes are great, and I love my Switch Pro controller. It's like my favorite controller ever, but at the same time, not being able to use it has opened up my eyes a little bit to the fact that there needs to be other options out there for people who can't use those types of input methods. And I believe it's Microsoft released a controller that is focused on accessibility earlier this year that does it really well. Now, if you want more information in terms of in-depth gameplay as it regards to accessibility, I would go check out Game Maker's Toolkit series on that. He has done multiple episodes on this and has done a lot more research on this topic than I have. I simply wanted to sort of talk about different control methods and my own experience with what I've been tackling the last couple weeks and not being able to use one of my hands. So I think that's going to lead us into the wrap-up, and I know this is sort of like a long-winded, unscripted episode, and it's sort of a jumbled bunch of thoughts, but it's something off the cuff that I'm dealing with right now that is messing with what I love to do on some level, which is just play games. And it's made me adapt in a different way and look at different sort of methods to play games. And I think that's actually In hindsight, that's going to be a good thing. It may not be great right now, but it's something that opens my eyes to the fact that things like controls for games are not something that are easy to use for everyone. So that's going to do it for us this week, guys. Thank you for listening to me ramble about multiple control schemes. I always appreciate you guys stopping by, listening, and I apologize for the hiatus, and I'm going to do my best to make more regular episodes again. I get my cast off in a couple weeks, so it should be a little bit easier for me to follow up with more episodes at a more regular pace, especially with other things I'm trying to do in my personal life. And with the holidays coming up too, it's kind of up in the air, but my goal is to get out a couple episodes between now and the end of the year on games that I've been really enjoying and that I want to tell you guys about. So where can you find me? You can reach me at 8bitarch@gmail.com. You can follow us at 8bitarch on twitter.com, and we have a Discord server which you can find in the show notes for this episode. Thank you guys for listening so much. I appreciate it, and I will see you guys next time.